questions.
Thank you, Lorraine. We're just trying to get some lights on for you folks up in the gallery there. We're not usually used to running this late, so I know they're here, but we're just not sure where the switches are. So, anyway, just to reiterate, if there isn't new information coming forward, we'd really appreciate your cooperation on keeping your presentations brief. Okay, I'll write off some names. Richard Ruoff? No. Jane Karpa? Christine Michalishan? James Monroe? Well, this is going faster than I thought. Margaret Stimson? Tammy Reynolds? Are you coming? Okay, that's great. Richard and Sally Tattersall? Peter Strauss? Thank you, sir. Lori Wilson? Okay, thank you. Sue Pimentel? Opposition. Joan Tremblay? Okay, thank you. Teresa Hallis? You'll speak? Okay, well, come on and get in the queue. And Paula Makarenko? Opposition, okay. Brian Saul? Thank you. Hey, from St. Charles Ward. Okay, we'll get going. The floor is yours.
I was hoping you'd say, come on down. Well, thank you for this opportunity to speak. I know it's late. We're all hot and tired and probably a little bit hungry. So thank you for continuing to hear us. I would also say it's probably a thankless task of trying to balance all the demands and interests from all the interest groups. So again, I thank you for listening and thank you for trying to do your best to do that. Just at the very beginning, there was a question raised earlier about if one of the presenters had actually participated in our Winnipeg, and I will say up front I did. I've attended as many of the presentations and community meetings that I found out about. I live at 610 Hearthstone Road, so you immediately know I'm affected by this plan, the recent plan. And I did voice my concerns at each and every one of them after getting information and trying to understand as much of the plan as I possibly could. From my perspective, it's not very much of a win-win situation for me. I'm facing increased taxes for local improvements that I and the majority of my neighbors have not requested. I'm facing increased traffic. 60% increase is what's projected, and I happen to be a policy analyst, and I can tell you for a fact that projections are always wrong, right? And it could be higher and lower, but I anticipate it to be higher. This will make entry and egress difficult from my yard. I happen to live right beside a crosswalk, so in addition to the increased traffic, I'm going to be watching as well for people entering and exiting from the crosswalk or walkway between my property and my neighbors. My bedroom happens to be on the front of my house, so I'm going to experience increased road noise. This is going to have a direct impact on my health as I happen to be a light sleeper. I already encounter a fair amount of road dust. If I leave my car parked in my driveway, it gets coated with dust. So I would anticipate that this will not get better, but will get worse. I'm also facing decreased access to the south end of the city, as I'll no longer be able to go straight through to Wilkes. And I'm also facing decreased green space, natural space, and potentially hiking trails, etc., with all its attendance health benefits with it. I just got my tax bill, and well, relatively recently, and it has an assessment on it for local improvement. I'm assuming that's for the road and Is it the sidewalk that's going to be going in? Maybe someone can tell me exactly what the increase in my tax, the over $300 that I had in an increased taxes on my bills today. 610 Hearthstone. I would also note that I didn't receive notice from the developer on this, that this was occurring in my neighborhood and would have a direct impact on me. I found out because my sister called me one day and said, "Are you aware of this?" And I started investigating it. I read all the documents, attended, made my concerns known, and actually asked a number of my peers on my street to attend. There is a couple people that are in the audience tonight. May I say your names? Maurice Doucette, who lives at 776 Hearthstone, Joe and Willa Sask. And my immediate neighbor at 601 across the street had to leave because it was just getting far too late. And it's difficult for some people to stand up and speak. So even though I'm representing myself, I'm also representing a number of other people that are in a similar situation. No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Because you're running out quick here.
I know I am. However, given the extensive time allowed to some, I'm sure you won't mind if I even go a minute over. I will say that, so from my perspective, I'm looking to the city to do something to offset the cost to me as a resident in the area. I'm the kind of person that pays taxes and don't complain about paying taxes because I believe in supporting the Canada I live in. But in this case, I'm paying a lot of taxes, will experience most of the inconvenience associated with this division, including increased taxes, traffic, which you've already heard about from Alan. And so I'm looking to you to find a way to offset that to me, such as reduce my taxes, because I'm the one experiencing the inconvenience. And frankly, I don't see why I have to pay for the local improvements, which I'm not going to get most of the benefit from. So if you can find a way to address my concerns, I would gladly support this. I'm not anti-development. I also, as in my letter, but I won't go over, have concerns for green space, natural space, and wildlife corridors. We have an opportunity to hear, as one person cited, to create a legacy. And I believe that Paula, Scott, and Grant, it's in your hands that you're able to do that. I know it's a difficult job to balance everyone's interests, but I would appreciate it if you would consider ours. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Paula who's next? No. You step forward, ma'am. Just give us your name here. I've got these cards shuffled up.
Hi, I'm Teresa Hallis. Sorry, I live at 811 Buckingham Road.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm a relative newbie to Charleswood. I've lived in Charleswood for 11 years, and I moved there from Toronto. And it took me a long time to get over my homesickness for Toronto because I couldn't walk around the block to my choice of restaurants and coffee shops and so on. It was the Heart Trail that saved me. And I'm about 8 houses from the end of the road, and I have been on that trail almost every day of the last 11 years. What I have noticed in that time is how busy the Heart Trail is. And so even though most of my concerns about the wildlife and the, I'm not talking green space, I'm talking about space for wildlife and for people to enjoy wildlife, which is, I think, a very separate thing, that if you're talking about transit corridors or fast, I can't remember the term, transit paths or whatever, for bicycles to go downtown or wherever they're commuting to, there has to be recreational pathway as well. I've had so many close encounters with people who are in a hurry, and it does sort of coincide with rush hour. I think the path is very heavily used at certain times of the day, and it concerns me very much that if we have an influx of so many more people, that my safety will be in peril more often than it is already. So that's what I wanted to address.
Any questions, my colleagues? No? Thank you very much, Teresa.
You're welcome.
Great. Okay, Gerard Engel, Claire Coleman. Okay, Gerard's coming. Kathleen Mr. Bueno. Elizabeth Otter. Michelle Doust. Opposition, thank you. Bruce Hembroff.
Opposition.
Joe and Wilma Steska. Opposition, thank you, sir. We'll get you in a minute here, Gerald. Jody Firth. Steve Lesavage. Joan Hagberg. Opposition. John and Ruth Housen. Brad and Kim Hewlett. Okay. Lawrence Urban. Michael Caracas. Thank you, sir. Walter and Wilma Noasat. You're the last one. You get the close. That's okay. No problem.
My name is Jerry Engel. I'm a resident of Charleswood and have been for near 20 years. In my professional life, I'm an ISA or International Certified Arborist, and I have small practice and work throughout the city, primarily working at the preservation of notable trees and historic trees in our communities. And in my volunteer life, I'm acting as president for Trees Winnipeg, formerly the Coalition to Save the Elms. I'm here today to speak really briefly about the significance of the area that we're developing. I know we're most of us are aware of that. I know the developers are obviously aware of it. I know that the company that did the assessment are very aware of it. And what I'm here to say today is that I think we have a really unique opportunity to develop this area and maintain the naturalized spaces that exist in this area that just didn't, we can't remanufacture those. We can't remake those. We can't go plant an oak tree today and watch it grow to a 150-year-old or 200-year-old tree in our lifetimes. And we have trees like that within the precinct that is going to be developed. And if the right kind of sensitivity isn't taken when developing within that precinct, we can't often go back and fix it. At the beginning, I've heard this number 10%, and I've always really had a problem with 10%, wondering, well, where did that come from? How can you look at a piece of land as unique as this is and say that we need 10% green space? Is that just a standard number that we use throughout the country to when establishing or when setting out to develop areas, or is this 10% something that's just, that's what we're going to make it be, because anything more than that just means less revenue to, you know, whether it's the city or the developers or whatever. But I go back and say that the area is so unique, and the wetlands and grasslands and forested areas that we have throughout this area were developed not over hundreds of years but thousands of years. So we really have to create an opportunity here and develop in this area with great sensitivity to this, to the uniqueness of the natural landscape. We need to study that and understand what it is, protect the areas that are needed to be protected, and then develop, and then set and decide what that number is going to be. Cutting a roadway through a naturalized piece of property that has, whether it's aspen trees or willows or oak trees on it, with the road salts that are used today and the salt spray effects on trees and the runoff from the roads into those areas, if one drives down Grant and looks at in particular the south side of Grant along the Assiniboine Forest, and one only has to look a few 50 yards into the forest to see the effects of the road salt on all of those trees along that Assiniboine Forest. We can't have that in this new development. We want to develop this area so that people want to live there for the natural beauty that it has. I'm not opposed to the development, but I do oppose the current plan. I just don't think that we've really given enough thought into making sure that we really preserve large tracts of natural space where we can incorporate trails, we can have wildlife corridors, and so on. And when you look back in the history of the development of the area, when it was zoned from agricultural to residential in the 40s, in particular the Roblin Park community, which was one of the first areas to be developed, I mean, I'm not suggesting that we should be developing one-acre lots that were developed in the day, or even half-acre lots, and really not contesting lot size as much as I'm contesting we need to keep intact those precious naturalized spaces that we were given to work with. And we really can't mess that up. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any questions for Jerry Engel? Thank you, sir. All right. As the process unfolds, what we now have is the applicant returning.
Sorry, we just have to read these names. Oh. Also in opposition.
All right. We have to read something into the record here. These folks have contacted the clerk's office and were not able to attend tonight, but they are in opposition. So in opposition, Carl and Amanda Roberts, Daryl Bates, Pauline Bailey, Gail Watson, Nicole Clement, Tracy and Mark Chambers, Elizabeth Rennie, Gail Langdale, Nicole Langdale, Valerie Pearson, Tricia Gertner, Susan Trigg, Ken Friesen, Diane Peters, Vincent Martin, Stephanie McCorriston, Caitlin Rose, and Rob McCorriston, Ann Struck Savage, Jan Conan, and Linda and Albert Brown.
Thank you. Okay. You could also read these for information.
Oh, we have several folks here who have been here for information. We read these into the record. Barbara Cannons, Don Fuller, Stan Hutton, Peter Josephson, Lauren Scharf, and Jerry Bettig. Okay. All right, so what the process is the applicant now gets to come back and respond to questions, not add any new information, but we'll invite Landmark Development, Donovan Taves, and your colleagues, if you wish, to return to the microphone. There's one coming, I think.
Let's just get this up again.
She's with him. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. Maybe, yeah. Okay. So I was taking notes, and I've taken a lot of notes, and appreciate all of the comments that were made, and we listened carefully to each and every one of them. Many of the comments raised were clearly passionate voices focused on not developing. And as I indicated at the beginning of my presentation, Council has made that decision regarding that these lands are designated for new development, new communities, and taking the point existing communities where there's vacant lands north of the Hart Trail. Our job is to prepare a good plan for the development of these lands, not for the entire preservation or non-development of the land. So therefore, our job is to respond to the questions that deal with the plan, in my opinion. And we're going to try and do that to the best of our ability. There are a number of the questions that deal with specific expertise, so I'm going to ask other members of my team to answer the questions that I don't have the expertise in, related to traffic and to natural areas assessment primarily, as well as the cost-benefit study, so that to those who ask questions can get an answer. Whether it's satisfactory to them or not, I won't know, but we will do our best to do that. A second critique or suggestion is that the plan is possibly premature or inadequate. And I can assure you that the collective resources of professional opinion, both on the study team and these six, it used to be seven, but six people around this room and the staff that go behind them have put a lot of resources and a lot of effort over the last 2 years, frankly at a lot of expense, and you know, all accountable to our professional organizations and the things that we do. So I'm very confident that the plan is thorough and has been carefully developed. There's a lot to address, but I'm going to try and tackle it on a topic basis. And I thought that I would tackle it in this way. Land use first. And this is roughly in keeping with the outline of the plan, because we're critiquing the plan. Land use, the greenway concept, and trails. So there were quite a number of comments, particularly from Mr. Van Roon, that were quite helpful, and I'd like to address those. A fair number of comments on transportation planning and traffic impact assessment, particularly vis-a-vis North-South Streets, Wilkes, the timing of the Bill Clement Parkway. And Bob will help us with answers in that category. And then about the natural areas, so much good work was done. There was some critique by Native Plant Solutions and the team there. Again, not just an individual, but a whole team of people. There was some critique that maybe that didn't make its way into the plan well enough. There's some questions about naturalized wetlands versus existing wetlands or wet areas, and some information about specific species that was brought up that Lynn will tackle for us. There was some critique, fairly structured critique, in a presentation about cost benefits. So we will cite some information from the cost benefit study, and I'll invite Eric Vogan to do that for us. And that is it. There are a series of other minor things that I'd like to tackle one at a time after that, just so that folks who did bring them up can get a response. I'm not going to be able to respond to everything that was raised, and then, of course, we'll take questions from the committee. Does that sound like a fair approach?
That sounds good. We have a council meeting at 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Yes.
We have to be out of here by then.
My objective
some
is
of
to
us do.
Answer questions best we can, so I'm tired, too. Okay, so on the topic of land use, there was some commentary regarding the areas north of the Hart Trail and how they're treated. And you can see from this land use plan, there it is. They're all, the direction is very clear. It's actually not unclear, it's very clear. It's very decisive that the land use in those areas north of the Hart Trail should be exactly matching the land use that's existing around those areas right now, i.e. single-family development. There's also a policy in the plan, section 6.1.2 sub 5, which one of the commenters did highlight. They felt it wasn't strong enough. However, the plan does address the issue of the nature of the single-family land use in that area. And it says, for the undeveloped lands north of the Hart Trail, the density site area and site width of new residential lots directly adjacent to existing lots should generally reflect the pattern of development in adjacent areas. People critique the wording where it says generally. It sounds like a weasel clause. We're not very familiar with precinct plan level. It's a secondary plan. It's not a zoning plan. It's also not an R. Winnipeg level plan. It's right in between. So these policies are designed to inform the decision-making at the subdivision level. So when you councillors receive a subdivision plan, you can look at this policy and say, within reason, of course, is this policy met? Do the lot sizes of single-family homes in these areas generally reflect the lot sizes nearby? It does specifically not say shall, because in some cases you have 100-foot lots, for example. If you have to build 100-foot lots in there, it's not going to be economical in this day and age. It's not feasible. You do not see 100-foot lots in the city for a reason. So the policy is there. It's not missing. So I guess it would be up to committee to decide whether you wanted to revise that policy and whether you felt that direction was not clear enough. There's some question about Area 7 as to what it is. It is a mixed-use area. It's very clear on the plan what the direction is there. If a person wanted to find out what could be done in that mixed-use area, you would just simply go to the mixed-use section in there about. There are a series of policies there that guide the development in that area. So I won't go through those all. It is shown as mixed use that it would accommodate multifamily development. There's existing commercial there. It's another rationale for making the area mixed use to accommodate what's there already. There's a golf operation and there's a lumber store as well. So the guidance for Area 7 is clear in our opinion. That's all I had for land uses. The next one was greenway and trails. There was some comment, Terry, actually could we switch to the greenway slide, about the configuration of the trail, the First Nations Tribute Trail being cut off from Wilkes. We specifically originally thought it would be a good idea to have a lot of north-south connections like this that I'm showing here with the light through our work with Native Plant Solutions and actually speaking with Erin McCants, who's the woman somebody referred to as had studied deer in Charleswood. We met with her early on to make sure that we had the wisdom from her work as well. This was discouraged, and we don't think, in retrospect, it is a good idea to be sending people or funneling animals across the rail line and Wilkes Avenue. Hence the diversion, I guess, in terms of Mr. Van Roon's words, down here to this corner of the trail. Actually, we thought there was an excellent asset here in that there's an existing underpass. So it provides a safe protection under the perimeter. So we thought that was a valuable idea in terms of the trail network. If you can bring to mind the connection from Fort White into the Assiniboine Forest, people cross that grade at the intersection there at Shaftesbury. People should be crossing at controlled intersections on Wilkes, we think, and we can't send them into the middle of an area across the rail track. So we're quite happy with that way that trail system is configured. There was some commentary about how people will travel east to west. The Hart Trail is diverted and then maintained in its east-west alignment, so there is east-west connection. There was concern that the Hart Trail at its existing 99 feet wide is not enough. We agree. I mean, we've got policy in the plan that says widen at every opportunity. So the public reserve, and here's where a big dilemma comes in precinct planning for this area. The public reserve can be spent in a number of ways. Areas along lakes, we think that the lakes needn't be only for the private individuals who live along the lakes. We should have some of it publicly accessible. So we want some PR along there. We want to be able to preserve natural areas. We say it in the plan that that's a good use of the PR. We want to be able to widen the Hart Trail where possible. And we want to be able to have active parks and passive parks. So we have to divide this pot up in a number of ways, and it's a challenge to do that. The plan allows for and encourages widening of the Hart Trail. Those decisions about how that PR should be used occur at the subdivision stage. That's where they occur. We can't, in this level of a plan, of a precinct plan, and you'll see it in all the precinct plans to come, and you can ask your planning contingent here if they can agree with this, or they agree with this, that when you see a subdivision plan, this precinct plan will guide the selection of PR. And on this topic, the selection of PR, getting a little ahead, but it's on topic, is supposed to go through the ESNL process, and the policy clearly indicates that's what will happen. So all of the good information that exists from Native Plant Solutions or even from CCHP's contributions is going to be Rodney's consideration as the naturalist, and he will have to go through the ESNL process to help determine whether where the natural lands to be preserved should be. So there's clear guidance in this plan for that. Some may not have picked it up, or they may not agree that it's enough. We feel it's exactly appropriate. There was a comment that we should be preserving larger tracts of land. We agree. That's a policy in the plan. You'll see whenever a committee ends up starting to deal with subdivision plans, I know in Area 1, because I'm involved in that, we see a natural area being preserved, and it's a large natural area entirely preserved, with the exception, as been pointed out, a roadway coming through that you need local roads. So we located that roadway in an area that least impacts that. Okay, transportation. So I'm going to ask Bob Carilko from Stantec to help answer a few of the questions related to transportation. I will say that the transportation slide, if you could go ahead. There's lots of discussion about Wilkes. I don't want to steal your fire here, Bob, but the plan clearly indicates that as subdivisions come forward, that Wilkes, first of all, a traffic impact assessment has to be done for every subdivision that comes forward, and that's what's going to determine when the closures occur, what improvements are required to local roads, what improvements are required to Wilkes. Okay? So a big problem on Wilkes right now is the intersections. Those are the dangerous areas. There's no acceleration lanes. There's no deceleration lanes. There's no signalized control. And you'll see with ACG reporting at subdivision level, they'll start requiring those things. So that, in part, answers the question of Wilkes. Not all of it, because it doesn't address the widening, which is a city. A city does need to address that at some point. But this plan, without this plan, you won't see any improvements to intersections. Yes?
You know, it is the precinct plan, of course, but when the sub, you know, when zonings and stuff like that come forward, the developers would be responsible for any upgrades you're saying to, you know, some of the intersection improvements or anything.
Yeah, those are always evaluated by your departments. It's called the ACG report, Administrative Coordinating Group report. All of the engineers and others gather around and they assess the subdivision and they decide what's required. Mr. Rabin can elaborate on this if you like how that works. But that's where the requirements usually sit, and you'll see that in subdivision applications coming forward.
It requires kind of a traffic study.
You've got to look at the details, and the precinct plan is not the place to do that. The precinct plan provides the guidance which says do a traffic study, make sure that there's improvements to intersections. It's the proper guidance at this level. Okay.
I'm just going to change the slide to the one from the traffic that we did.
Come to the mic. I can...
I'm just going to put up a slide that has the traffic volumes from the traffic report that we did to support this document. So give me a minute, please. This slide showing.
This one's showing here, but not there. It's showing this, but not this. It's a different, this is a PDF.
Let's close the other one, or obviously minimize it.
I'm scared to do that.
You could just minimize it, buddy.
Okay. Okay, let's look to close it.
You don't have to. Honestly, I don't know if it's plugged in.
Yeah, it's still showing that slide.
We could unplug it and replug it.
Sure.
All the pros do, right? If you don't mind, I'll just.
Technology, it's a wonderful thing. While we're waiting for that slide, there's a few things that I'd sort of like to go through, sort of about the history of the transportation part of this this study. It's probably the most comprehensive traffic study I've done in the city. I've been doing this for 30 years, so there was a lot of work involved in getting to where we got. Before we even put anything, any road network on paper, we listened to the feedback that we had from the community from the first stakeholder meetings and that, and they identified that one of the biggest concerns was traffic infiltrating through the existing community. So we knew that was an issue. So the options that that we developed took that into account, and we paid particular attention to that. Early in the process, we reviewed all the previous studies in the Charleswood area, including, the old infamous Ridgewood Corridor, which ran down the Hart Trail. We knew that wasn't going to fly anymore. One option that we developed early was a do-nothing option, which basically kept the existing road system running from Wilkes to Robin Boulevard, and maintaining the sort of historic development of Charleswood, where any little development or homes fed onto those existing roads, and that had a huge impact on the existing traffic, because there is a lack of east-west roads to carry the traffic. And from the sort of origin-destination information that the city had, everybody wants to go north, they want to go east, they want to go southeast, downtown, Fort Garry Industrial, IKEA. So the general trend is to go basically east, and there's only a couple of routes that do that. That's Roblin and that's Wilkes. So we had to divert the traffic to either of those the main arterials. So we looked at, we developed three options for the first open house, and one of them, or actually all of them, had connections to the perimeter highway, one place and another. The numbers showed that that just wasn't needed. The distribution was fairly low. The cost of connecting to the perimeter highway was extreme. You're talking $20-$40 million for some type of interchange. MIT wasn't going to allow an at-grade intersection, so we took that off the table, and used Dale Boulevard and going south to Wilkes to get to the perimeter highway as the two options to get to the perimeter. After listening to people at the open houses, we kind of whittled that down to the recommended option, which is what you see here. And we looked hard at preventing the infiltration of precinct Q traffic into the existing Charleswood neighborhood, but realizing that the schools are all there, the shops are all there. We need some connection. We have to maintain some connection. Dale Boulevard was one of them. It's built as a collector street. If you can see on the slide there, the existing traffic volumes are the black numbers. So the 130 on Dale at the south end, well below what a collector can handle. So it was designed to expand or take traffic from areas to the south. With full development, and these numbers represent full development, we're adding another 945 vehicles to that. So we're still well below the 15.
Said, I think it was Dale was around 130, you said, well within a collector street.
The collector street volumes are typically anything over about 1,000 to 5,000 as a 10-meter pavement,
yeah.
And over 5,000 vehicles a day, you go up to a four-lane divided. That's in the city's transportation standards.
And they had how many?
At the four-lane divided, you can probably go up close to 20,000 vehicles a day as a collector, major collector. So we show, you know, this number shows at, for instance, at Charles, do you have a pointer? You know, at Charles Wood Road, the existing volumes at the Wilkes intersection is, you know, just shy of 1,200. We're adding about 2,600 vehicles to that. So we're, you know, in the 3,000 vehicle range, which is a 10-meter pavement. We identified the need to do some intersection improvements at all these existing crossings. Just as a statement saying, you know, and when we get into the subdivision plans, that's when, okay, what do we actually need there? There's another level of traffic impact study that gets into more details. This was based on sort of the general densities once the subdivision plan gets developed. It gets into more specific land use types and dwelling unit numbers and densities and stuff. So it's a refinement of what we did. Other areas of concern, you know, Rannoch and Eldridge have some, you know, a little bit volumes added to them, you know, 300, 600, 800. It's clearly in the collector area. Right now, I think it's built at a residential standard. So that is an area of concern that we identified. The opportunity to do some improvements based on the traffic coming out of these areas will have to be looked at. You know, at the subdivision stage, maybe there's an opportunity to do some improvements to those roads, add the sidewalk, you know, make it safer for pedestrians. Bill Clement Parkway, you know, it's going to attract about 10,000 vehicles from the subdivision. And what it does is it takes the traffic from existing adjacent streets and gives it into a good facility that's more attractive, more high speed, so that people, instead of driving slowly down a residential street, they'll use the higher speed facility. Yes, Scott.
The question, I mean, you obviously know your information there, but I just, you know, I'm assuming when you answer those questions, probably the question that some people in the audience might say, well, you know, they want kind of that guarantee. So is it possible, I don't know, some from administration, can you just outline, if there is a subdivision rezoning, kind of what he was saying, Bob was saying, in terms of the traffic flow studies and all that sort of stuff happens at the subdivision zoning process? I'm not sure who can answer that, but...
Depending on the specific type of application, and so far with the three applications before us in the Ridgewood South area, our Public Works Department has required that the developers provide individual traffic impact studies related to their developments and how that'll impact their development and adjacent streets.
Yep. When was that traffic data collected?
A lot of the information was from existing counts that the city had, and that goes back within 4 or 5 years of when we started this study. We did do about 30, maybe 20 intersection counts ourselves right at the start of the study. There is a graphic of that in the transportation plan identifying those locations. So, yeah, there was a sort of not very much information on traffic flows in the area, so we had to supplement what we needed to just to get a good handle on what traffic was out there. So it's as current as it we can get.
Can you speak to Wilkes?
Which part of Wilkes? There's two big issues with Wilkes. One is the existing intersections at the railway crossings. We identified that those intersections need to be improved. If we're adding a couple thousand vehicles to the crossing, there's definitely a lack of deceleration lanes, turning lanes. That is all going to be addressed in individual subdivision plans. So, for instance, I believe there's work being done in this area, Area 1. The traffic study done for that area, which I think is under review right now, identifies intersection improvements at Charleswood Road and some improvements to Charleswood Road leading up to that intersection. I'm assuming that the same process will be for each of these other areas. What do we do at this intersection? What needs to be done to handle that traffic? Okay. The other part of the Wilkes equation is what happens when Bill Clement Parkway is connected to Wilkes. And we generated some numbers. I believe the MMM study generated some numbers. They're actually fairly close. Making that connection has a big impact. It not only takes traffic off the residential streets in the area and puts it on a major road that serves the function that that our arterial does.
Right.
Well, yes, yeah. It serves the demand that Shaftesbury is carrying right now. People drive down Grant to Shaftesbury to go to Wilkes. It may have an effect on Keniston. It could take some of the traffic off of Keniston because, again, people are driving down Grant Avenue to get to Keniston to go wherever they wanted to go south on Keniston. So we anticipate that there could be a substantial attraction of other area traffic going to Wilkes. So our volumes on Wilkes were in the 30,000 range, and right now it's a two-lane road. It is a problem or a potential problem.
Yeah. Sorry, one other question just on Wayne. So, I mean, I know you're not talking about the subdivisions and that sort of thing,
right,
the precinct,
yeah,
plan, but, we know obviously the first subdivision would be in the corner, right, the Qualico one.
The area one, yes.
Yeah, number one. So there's a few areas where you'd enter into Wilkes. So, I mean, what happens if you have, one of that area is developed, number one is developed first, you've got some improvements that happen initially right there off of Wilkes.
Correct.
What about the other intersection improvements? Would they be required to upgrade those before?
I can't answer that question.
Or how much would
it? Yeah, the ACG reports would deal with those. The individual subdivision plans, yeah, for those zones would answer those questions.
But from your expert opinion, how much of an impact if you develop the number one zone or whatever you're calling it?
Well,
how much would the others have an impact?
Most of the traffic that would be coming out of Zone 1 would use the Charleswood intersection.
Yeah.
So it would have the biggest impact on that intersection. The rest would be through traffic. It would make it more difficult to access Wilkes from the other ones, just because, we're adding a couple thousand vehicles to the mix. And these are daily trips. These aren't hourly trips. These are daily trips. So take 10% of it. That's your our peak hours, so it's significant. It's not huge.
Okay.
I think that's pretty well it. Again, Wilkes is a major concern. Building Bill Clement Parkway, even if we stop it at Ridgewood, would help alleviate some of the traffic off the adjacent streets. And we just have to find a way to get to Wilkes.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of representation from you know, the folks that are out here today about the extension of you know, the parkway,
right?
And some concerns that it, you know, this development, essentially the whole precinct plan and some of the subdivision, shouldn't happen before the extension of the parkway actually happens. How much of an impact is the parkway extension? How much of a concern should that be, I guess, from your perspective?
Loaded question. Clement Parkway will serve sort of a bunch of needs in the city itself. It will also provide access from this development, so that they don't infiltrate through the neighborhood. The way we've got the collector streets and the connections, everything is, they're connected, but they're not direct. You know, you're not going to have. The worst thing about a nice straight street is, there's nothing in my way that says I can't drive 70 kilometers an hour, 80 kilometers an hour. So when we're designing modern transportation systems, we design so that you don't want to speed.
You know, to what I'm trying to get you to answer right here is, you don't have a concern with the parkway not happening first before this development happens in terms of traffic flow basis?
The development was designed to be staged, okay? The numbers show that Area 1 has very little impact on the existing network. There's a good connection to Wilkes for the people that want to get to Wilkes. There's a good connection to Roblin. On a street that was designed to handle the traffic that we anticipate. There's local connection to you know, Charleswood Road, which we really don't want to, you know, impact, but that's why we made it windy through a, you know, local street system. Area 1 can go. After that, you really have to kind of look at, you know, what's the next stage. Anything kind of north of the Hart Trail is going to use the existing street system, like the Eldridge, the Rannoch, to get to where it needs to go, and that's taken into account in the models that we did. That traffic's going to go north anyways. As far as Area 3, 4, and 5, you probably want to start at the east end and work back to the west and build your infrastructure as you go that way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
On your diagram, you keep, this is the second time I think I've seen it. The Clement Parkway, it's a dotted line. And I'm trying to see in the documents that were provided, do you intend for it to go to Ridgewood, or do you intend for it to go to Wilkes?
I believe under this precinct plan, it just went to Ridgewood. We identified the need that it probably should go to Wilkes at some point.
Well, I think I heard at a lot of public consultations that it should go to Wilkes.
Yeah, if you connect it to Wilkes, it's going to attract additional traffic, not just from the subdivision or from the precinct, but, you know, from St. James, a whole bunch of other areas. It's a nice little route from, you know, St. Vitale, Keniston, Sterling Lion Parkway, Wilkes, up this way to, you know, to get into the, you know, airport lands. So it's going to attract, it's going to take traffic off of Keniston, it's going to take traffic off of and put it on Wilkes. Wilkes is a two-lane, from Shaftesbury west, it's a two-lane road. And, you know, the opportunity to widen that on the existing alignment is not going to be easy because of the existing development and the proximity of the tracks. So
in your diagram and the report, then you're proposing that it only go to Ridgewood, and you're only seeing it increase by 400 vehicles. Is that correct?
10,400.
10,400
on Wilkes. Or on...
The Clement Parkway.
On Clement Parkway, yeah, 10,400.
So you'd only expect it to increase by 400 vehicles.
No, that other 10,000... Well, first of all, that 10,000 is traffic that would have been... that number probably shouldn't be there. That's the number that we anticipate would come off of Keniston and Shaftesbury. Because, yeah, it ends at Grant, right, or Roblin right now, or Grant, I guess. So anything south of Grant is new.
Okay, that's transportation.
Good.
Almost. There was some commentary regarding noise and traffic abatement along the perimeter of the precinct. Anyone who lands on the perimeter of the precinct, those matters are always dealt with at the subdivision level, and you'll see in the ACG reports for the subdivisions that are coming, they deal with berming and fencing and noise attenuation. I want to clarify with the Elmhurst closing that Elmhurst would be closed north of the Hart Trail. I think some people thought it would be closed at Wilkes, and would only be closed when you had the Bill Clement Parkway in, which would make good sense. Mr. Roberts gave a very good presentation and some good ideas. He named Rannoch, Hearthstone, Dieppe, and Eldridge, and named some specific improvements that would be beneficial there. We actually agree with those. I think those are good ideas. And the committee and the city council at large might consider tapping the Charles of Transportation levy for something useful like that as a suggestion. The rerouting plan that Mr. Roberts indicated where the arterial went south along the rail line and then crossed over, he's correct. We didn't talk very long about it. We know the Public Works wouldn't support that alignment. It's very tricky in terms of the grade separated intersection with the rail and with Wilkes. So we didn't spend much time considering that idea, although we did consider it and we did talk about it with Mr. Roberts. That is it. That's all I had for transportation. Any further questions on transportation? Okay. On natural areas, I'm going to invite Lynn up to speak about naturalized wetlands. There are some comments about specific species and anything else she sees fit to speak of.
So my name is Lynn Dupuis, and I'm an ecologist with Native Plant Solutions. And Native Plant Solutions conducted the biological inventory in 2012 on Qualico lands, and I was an author on both the inventory report, the recommendations, and I was also out in the field doing some sampling. I'll just provide a quick background to the biological inventory, but the reports are there for you to read over. The inventory followed standard scientific protocol for all the different species and habitat types that we surveyed. And some of those species and habitat types, species included nocturnal owls, amphibians, waterfowl and upland nesting birds, breeding birds, yellow rails, also did incidental observations of mammals and monarch butterflies, and then in terms of vegetation, a vegetation survey focusing on flowering plants as well, and wetland inventory. And this was meant to build upon the natural areas assessment that the City of Winnipeg had previously provided. And this timeline followed from April to August of 2012. I wanted to provide that as a background to some of the natural areas comments that we had. Some of the results that we found from our inventory is that most species required more than one habitat type within the area, and so that included aspen and oak forest, wetland, and grassland, and that result is provided in our recommendations that we have in our document. Grassland habitat, it does make up a very large area of the areas that we surveyed on Qualico lands. The grassland habitat, however, is dominated by non-native and invasive species. For the most part, there are native species in that area, and there are certain areas that are more dominated by native species, but in the most case, it is dominated by non-native. And that was also reflected in the city's natural areas assessment report. However, that doesn't discount the habitat that they do provide to some of the species in the area, and we did see nesting mallards in the area, as well as a number of other bird species. In terms of wetland habitat, we didn't rank the quality of the wetland habitat, but we did what's called a Stewart and Cantrude wetland classification, and what it basically does is rank the different habitat types or the different types of wetlands. And the types of wetlands that we see or we saw in Qualico lands are mostly non-permanent wetland types, which means that they hold water for a short period of time in the spring, and then that water tends to dry out as the seasons go on. These types of wetlands, although they provide good habitat, are very difficult to preserve in urban environments. So please keep that into perspective. I'll speak to our naturalized stormwater ponds that are in the precinct plan, and these naturalized stormwater ponds are in a number of developments in Winnipeg, Sage Creek, South Point, Bridgewater, a number of different ones. What the naturalized stormwater ponds are is an upland native grass buffer above the normal water level of the stormwater pond, and below that they support wetland species, and they're designed to do that. And they basically not only have the function of a stormwater pond, but also a natural wetland. They have water quality cleaning purposes. They support habitat. And they also provide a number of additional values. They also, somebody touched upon additional costs that you would have with managing naturalized stormwater ponds as compared to traditional stormwater ponds. And I should say that those are two different things. Naturalized stormwater ponds actually don't require any maintenance because of the natural wetland properties. They help maintain water quality because of the wetland plants. They're biologically made to do that. And this is quite different from some of the traditional stormwater ponds that we see around the city of Winnipeg that have major algal water quality problems as well as vegetation problems, and there's a cost to control those. So consider that as well, too. I also wanted to talk about species that were identified under the Species at Risk Act, and I'd like to clarify some of those things. There are a couple of focus species under the Species at Risk Act, species of special concern that include the yellow rail, the northern leopard frog, and monarch butterfly. They're species of special concern. However, they're not legally protected. They're neither threatened or endangered. The bobolink is not listed under the Species at Risk Act, but it's listed under COSWIC, which is another federal government body, but it's not legally protected. So please keep that in mind. We also wanted to enforce in our inventory, as well as our recommendations document, not to focus on the species level, but rather focus on the community level. And by providing high-quality habitat, you can support a variety and a diversity of species that can be sustained in the urban environment. So from our biological inventory, we provided a number of recommendations to future developers within the precinct. And I'd have to say that Landmark and Qualico were really great at taking these recommendations into the precinct plan, and we see that. And so kind of the four overarching recommendations, and we'd like you to review the recommendations document as well as to preserve the different habitat types within Ridgewood type to make sure that there's representations of all the different habitat types. So wetland, and we see that in the naturalized stormwater ponds, grassland habitat, and the different types of forest habitat. Mitigate, including coordinating timing of construction so that you're not affecting certain species at their key breeding times, as well as focus on fewer large rather than many small habitat patches to avoid the edge effect of urban environments. Creation and enhancement, and as I said before, there is room for enhancing habitat, and I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but by having more native species within the grassland habitat type, they'll be able to better provide structure, both horizontal and vertical structure for nesting birds and waterfowl. And there's also room to enhance habitat type with nesting boxes or bat boxes, or for birds as well, too. And then an overarching recommendation is to maintain connectivity so that there are no isolated habitat patches, and we see the Heart Trail as kind of a great starting place to maintain habitat connectivity across all areas of the precinct. I think that touches on all the topics that I heard coming from the group, so I couldn't touch on any of them specifically, but hopefully that helps.
Victoria McDonald with CCHP raised a number of good ideas that we thought merited further discussion, and would be absolutely willing to entertain those. Creating a minimum allotment of natural areas in each precinct, each sub-area, although that is challenging because some areas have much more than others. There are some areas where, by the city's assessment, there's not just about anything in terms of good quality, and then there's some, like Area 5, that have a lot. So that might be challenging, but I think it's worth discussing further. Creating a blueprint, thought that was also a good idea, and certainly those things can be worked on even beyond the precinct plan. Would it reiterate that the funding option or the land swap option in exchange for natural lands is a very good idea, and I know there would be willingness to entertain that idea from at least the major developer in the precinct plan. That's all I had for natural areas, and I would invite Eric Vogan to answer a question about the cost-benefit study, or clarify, perhaps.
Good evening, Eric Vogan. Over the last couple of years, we've learned a lot about Charleswood and about development and nature, traffic, finance, many things. And I'm very, very proud to be here with the team we had. When it came to looking at the cost benefits, we had seen good examples of cost benefit studies done in Bridgewater particularly. I think it was very thorough. It included all the operating costs of new development, the capital costs of new development, the depreciation replacement, and the net benefits were big. I thought to address the Bridgewood development that I would check downtown. So I checked with the boss at Center Venture and asked who he would recommend, what firm he might recommend to do a cost-benefit study. And Ross McGowan recommended Deloitte, of course, a well-known international accounting firm. Met them and we talked. They have a specialized team in Toronto that handles costs and benefits of municipal infrastructure and development. The team went to work like a bunch of accountants do. They start at about 8 in the morning and they get their pencils out and they go through thoroughly through a lot of numbers. They looked at development costs. They looked at replacement of those costs. They incorporated over, I believe, a 70-year period the maintenance cycle of the internal services. They also went downtown. They checked in with Georges Chartier and his staff and found out what the average operating costs are for homes in the city of Winnipeg, and they incorporated that in. And with the pace of approximately 100 to 150 homes a year over, that would be probably about 20 years, they came back with a net present value of $54 million. Now that means value today. I would point out to probably Chris Leo's disappointment, that these operating costs, which were included exhaustively in this thing, include the cost of fire, police, library, garbage pickup, all those things, and they include the average cost. We, you particularly might be aware that the average cost for police and fire is probably a little high for Charleswood. I don't think that Charleswood's costs are anywhere near the costs that they face in District 3 or the north end of District 1. Yet these average costs were taken. Still, the net present value is there. So the net present value that was derived represented the contribution that the precinct development would offer the city at large. Now, there is obviously the question as to what the city at large would have to do in order to see development go in this precinct where they are looking for development. One thing that is necessary for a certain portion of the precinct is the extension of a Hearthstone drain, which at a cost of about $3 million would go through an area that at this point suffers from bad drainage, but would hook into a new wetland system that would benefit not only Precinct Q, but all the way down through future precincts south of Wilkes. This capital cost would enable further local improvements in drainage that are strictly optional in the hands of the local councilor and the local community, but the bones are there for improving drainage as a result of this work. The other thing that we've looked at is, of course, the Bill Clement Expressway. This is indeed part of the long-discussed inner beltway of the city. The Bill Clement, the W.R. Clement Parkway, is eventually to hook up with Bishop Grandin. It's supposed to hook up, of course, across Moray and somehow get to the industrial lands west of the airport. But it is indeed a regional economic artery. An expressway is a limited access road that provides great scale, lots of capacity for moving vehicles from region to region. The function that this has related to Precinct Q is Precinct Q can connect to it and thereby virtually lance a boil that is there with the lack of arterial structure that has plagued Southern Charleswood ever since Unicity came around. The question of $60 million versus what cost the local effect cost or local replacement cost of a Bill Clement Parkway, I think, is germane. When we were doing estimates of what kind of a local road or what kind of a higher-speed local road would be necessary to hook Ridgewood up to Grant in order to hook it to the rest of the W.R. Clement Parkway came up, we came up with estimates of about 20% of that. It's $12, $14 million. That would provide a high-speed road with limited intersections and would get the traffic out of Ridgewood and up into the rest of the system. But it would not have included the vast scale of the existing W.R. Clement Parkway with its grand intersections and overpasses and whatnot. Pardon me?
Can you talk about the $12 million figure again, please?
Well, the cost, I put the W.R. Clement Parkway that we see on the drawing provides is basically a stretch of road that would get you to Grant and the W.R. Clement Parkway. So if that road was there by itself, in other words, just a simple two-lane higher-speed road, it would cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $12, $14 million. It wouldn't have all the giant berms and traffic accoutrements that would accompany a regional expressway. The regional expressway that is contemplated there is supposed to be a capital region expenditure performed by the city at large with likely assistance from the federal and provincial governments. But the simple road function that it performs is much less expensive than the large Clement Parkway plan. So I think that that serves to clarify the issue of what $12 million or $15 million gets you, as opposed to what $60 million getting to Wilkes would be like. So I guess the conclusion is that we see a development that today would produce a value of $54 million. Of course, if you look at how much that would provide over the next 5 to 10 years, of course, those numbers are greater as time moves on because they're present value to now. Similarly, W.R. Clement Parkway would be achieved over time. With a schedule, that comes on incrementally as well.
But the $54 million, that takes into account everything. Like, you know, there's always the argument if you have suburban expansion, it creates sprawl and all that sorts of stuff, and you're saying that...
Those that are familiar with the numbers know that good quality development is of huge benefit to the city. School boards know that as well. They're dying to have new subdivisions in their catchment areas.
And then, sorry. Okay, well, fair enough. But that's a discussion to be had with the provincial government, too.
I think we're well aware that Wilkes is probably a street in need irrespective of any local development, and city at large, province, and feds are responsible for those major bones to our transportation infrastructure.
Includes fire and police.
It includes all those services, yes. Services. Yeah, those numbers were arrived at in consultation with Georges Hatchier. Of your city.
Okay.
So if there are any other questions about that, I'll be happy to answer them, but otherwise I'll...
Just to go back to the cost-benefit analysis that you undertook, you got the numbers from Georges, our CFO. When I asked them independent of your cost-benefit analysis, they told me the average cost of servicing a house across the city was $1,700, and your report shows $1,250, I think. Is that right?
My understanding is that those numbers he got, or the Georges Hatchier's numbers, were from...
Okay. I need an explanation of why the difference, and it's taken a few months to get that number from them.
I believe he offered two numbers. I believe he offered a per household number and a per person number, and I believe the accountants and he arrived at an appropriate means of blending those, probably on average household size or something.
Which Chartier are we talking
about? George.
Works for us, or
yeah.
Chartier the associate?
No,
not the realtor.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you just go back to your comments on the Clement Parkway, then? It's the extension.
Yeah, I think we're getting a hint.
Happens at 11:30 every night.
The $60 million was the cost in the Transportation Master Plan, I believe, to extend it to Wilkes, correct?
That's my understanding. I'm not familiar with the source of
that
number, but I think it's working.
Can you clarify, because some of the slides have shown no only to taking it to Ridgewood, then? Is that what you're putting forward? Are you putting forward to only continue it to Ridgewood, or are you?
Well, I'm not. It's a city expressway,
right? Okay.
And what we're saying is that it's from for the purpose of taking traffic and moving it to the east, rather than having it infiltrate through existing Charleswood, a smaller road will do, and that much road will do a fine job.
And I think to that point too, you know, if you're creating the extension of the Charleston Parkway, it's not just to feed Ridge, you know, your development, essentially. It's kind of a global city. It's a global city initiative if you're looking to invest those. That would be my opinion anyways. That's just a comment more than a question. So. But I just said if we're going to expand that wouldn't be just to you know, help your development or you know, for your development.
Correct.
To expand. It's just to expand the city because you're looking to do an inter ring road essentially in the city of Winnipeg as opposed to
we have to buy land from McDonald and there's all kinds of things that have to go on before
now.
It is
indeed a capital region economic initiative.
Yeah. You good?
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. You're done, Donovan? Okay. Well, thank you for your presentation, gentlemen. colleagues? Administration, would you like to throw anything on the table here before we make our next move? Jay?
Pages and pages of questions. I'm wondering if any of you have anything to offer to answer what we've heard.
Well, I could say a few words from a planning perspective. It's a public consultation process and a planning process that we haven't seen in this magnitude before in any of our previous statutory plans, and we have over 14 statutory plans or more in the 20s perhaps for the City of Winnipeg. So the work that was done was above and beyond what we've seen to date. We went through the plans. They've been meeting with us, talking with all of our departments regularly right up until this morning. That's why some of those changes came through at the 11th hour, because they were dealing with the stakeholders. They were dealing with planning, with parks, with public works, right up until this morning. So that's why those changes came through at such a late hour. They were trying to get it in time for the meeting so that we could make a decision on the latest draft. But it wasn't good for the committee because it came at such a late hour. But that was the collaboration piece. We were in continual discussions. In terms of our Winnipeg and Complete Communities, we feel the plan addresses the directions and policies in Complete Communities. In terms of the existing development next to some of those vacant areas like Vanscoy and such, we do look at the existing single-family residential. The proposal is for single-family residential. The lots are smaller than what exists on Vanscoy, but that's two different eras. You're talking about development from the 50s and 60s on chip seal roads with ditches versus development today with full curb and gutter, underground land drainage pipes, etc. So we have to weigh that economic idea as well when we're looking at how these new subdivisions fit with existing subdivisions.
Just a question on that too. Like, we always look in plan
Winnipeg essentially. In terms of the character, you know, does it fit into the character of the street? So you're saying, because it's kind of a different, I don't want to say subdivision, but it's a different area, there's a difference between the two areas you just mentioned?
Yeah, it's connecting to the existing roads. Public Works asks for detailed traffic studies on every subdivision, and they will be asking the developers to fulfill obligations like intersection improvements that might be a block away, but that this new development of, say, 32 lots would affect this intersection further down. So the city engineers look at these things very closely, and we try to make sure there is no negative impact. But you could say one extra car is a negative impact if you're living there and, you know, you have the peace and quiet you have. So it's a balancing act. But like I say, we look at these applications very closely, and we have conditions that we would like the developers to fulfill. If there's anything I left out from land development or parks?
Was another question about the 10%. It's a standard clause in the charter that doesn't preclude us from taking more land through other means, which the plan does address, and we've discussed at length with the developer. We're just looking at the best way to achieve that, if that's the direction we're going, and I get the impression that that's the direction we're going. I know that, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten which of the presenters kind of honed in on the fact that we had stipulated areas for active and passive. And I wanted to just go back to one of the first clauses in the parks policies, where it says that the precinct shall provide residents of Ridgewood South active recreation, passive recreation,
additional green space adjacent to Hart Trail, and preservation enhancement of existing natural areas. So they're all considered equally. One isn't greater than the other. The only reason we put numbers in, actually, it's funny when you see someone else's interpretation of something you thought was, it covered off your worst nightmares, was we put numbers in to ensure that it didn't end up being if we had 48 acres of parkland, that it became a 48-acre park. So we wanted to sort of give almost limits of how some of these other park areas would be established so that we did have capacity for natural areas. So just wanted to alleviate concerns that the intent of the wording wasn't to focus on active and passive in terms of created park space, but was to try and balance out the overall provision of park and take into account the valued natural areas. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, are you ready to roll here?
Okay, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that there has been an extensive amount of consultation and studies, including the cost-benefit analysis. However, I'm very concerned about the timing of receiving the report that we got today. In fact, I haven't even read it. And, you know, I had many questions even last night and today, and I feel that we are all scrambling around to try to make some amendments to this plan. And I think I like to read things in detail, and I like to ask a lot of questions, and it was literally on our desks here when we arrived. And those who took their time to be here today did not have the opportunity to understand what the changes were. And that's not saying that I can't walk and chew gum at the same time, because I can, but this is very significant. This is something that some people have waited for 30 or 40 years. Some people have lived in this community for 30 or 40 years, and I think changes on the fly that need careful consideration are disrespectful to us and to the public service. And I'm not sure, and I haven't been briefed from them, about what's in the document. So I'm going to be moving a motion today to ask for a little bit more time, and I'm going to be moving to adjourn this to September, but leaving the opportunity open to hear from those of you who have been here today and from anybody new who has not spoken. That being said, there are many things identified today that are issues and need some addressing that I would like our city and our city administration and us to work on, so that we can make this a reasonable plan and can be accepted by more residents, if possible. Firstly, given that the ESNL document currently prevents the administration from undertaking an ESNL assessment in advance of development application, I feel that the administration is prevented from providing direction or recommendations for priority areas. And I will be raising this motion. I can't hear today, but I will be raising it on our July 9th Assiniboia Community Committee meeting, specifically suggesting that the public service proceed with the ESNL evaluations of all of Precinct Q natural lands in advance of development applications and in consultation with the developer, CCHP, and the public, and they will prepare a natural areas preservation plan, complete with the map and strategies, and this will be considered at our September meeting with this area plan, or with this precinct plan. I understand that this will give more time and latitude to look at alternatives, but will still give the community some comfort that this was identified as a priority and will be addressed. Secondly, I will also raise at the July 9th Assiniboia Community Committee that the Standing Policy Committee on Public Works consider the roadway project for inclusion in the 2014 capital budget, that being the extension of the William Clement Parkway to Wilkes, and that the first step would be the functional preliminary design study, and that be undertaken as soon as possible. And the purpose of this is to address the existing traffic concerns of the neighborhood. As well, Twinning Shaftesbury was included in the report this committee approved in December 2012. And I would also be moving a motion at the Assiniboia Community Committee further revisiting the twinning of Shaftesbury and its budgeting. I would ask that the developers consult with key groups about the changes that they did submit today, and that they gather their input, and so that hopefully they come back, and particularly speaking about the CCHP, that they come back and are perhaps maybe more supportive of the report. And if there are changes to a subsequent report, that they're provided to this committee at least 24 hours in advance. Third, I would like to explore how we obtain or designate more than 10% in the PR. This is very important for many people and was evident today and via the emails that we received. And it has been too rushed to figure out in this forum. And I'd like to figure out how we best do this, because I think it balances the needs of the community. And I'd like an opportunity to discuss that more fully with the public service. There are a number of other items that I'd like to discuss with the public service and some of my council colleagues, because as many on both sides, for and against, have said, there are many City of Winnipeg considerations that need to be given to the existing concerns to balance with any new development. So with that, I would move adjournment of this item to our September.